Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 18, Telling Stories and Giving Thanks, a conversation with storyteller Kay Olan, Wolf Clan Mohawk. Kay is a Mohawk educator and storyteller. She's a retired school teacher and a former director of a Mohawk community located in central New York State. The name of the community I will let her pronounce. She has appeared in the Iroquois segment of the documentary How the West Was Lost, which aired on the Discovery Channel, and the Indigenous Women's Initiative acknowledged Kay Olan as a 2009 Woman of Peace. And there's a certain, another probably Mohawk word that I cannot pronounce. She has a beautiful CD called Mohawk Stories. So after the conversation, there'll be a track played from that. And the CD has music by Dennis Yeri. According to the CD, Native American storytelling plays an important role in the transmission of knowledge, the teaching of values, and the sharing of laughter, tears, and conversation. We'll hear more about that during the conversation. Welcome, Kay Olan, to Between the Lines. Very grateful to have you on today and to hear some of the history and what's going on with storytelling and about the Native American perspective. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing good today. The sun is shining and it's not too cold. One of the first things that I wanted to ask you before we get into the storytelling is if you could give the listeners a little bit of background on the history of the Mohawk and their connection with the Iroquois Confederacy, or I hope I pronounce it right, the Haudenosaunee, the people of the Longhouse, because over the past years I've learned a little bit, and from what I've learned, it's just I just think it's such an essential thing that especially people in the Northeast and anywhere know. A lot of the U.S. Constitution, from what I've learned, actually comes from some of the Great Law of Peace, and so I just think it's such an important thing for people to know. Can you say, whatever you want to say about that?
Well, some say it was 1,000 years ago, and some say it was 2,000 years ago, that the Mohawk Nation, the Oneida Nation, the Onondaga Nation, the Cayuga Nation, and the Seneca Nations were at war with one another. It was a terrible time in our history, a time of bloodshed and sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And a man that we refer to as the peacemaker came to us with a message of peace and unity. And actually, to tell that whole story would take 10 days, so I'll just shorten it up a little bit. And the peacemaker succeeded in unifying those five nations into a peace league or a peace confederacy or a United Nations
mm-hmm.
based on peace. And some refer to that as the five nations because originally there were five, Mohawk, Oneida, Onondaga, Cayuga, and Seneca.
Right.
And some refer to it as the six nations because in the 1700s, the Tuscarora people came up from the Carolinas and joined. Then some referred to this confederacy as the Iroquois Confederacy. So the Iroquois is not a nation, it's a United Nations.
Oh, okay.
And our name for it is, as you mentioned, the Haudenosaunee, which means the people of the longhouse or the builders of the longhouses, because we used to live in long bark-covered houses. So when you hear the terms five nations, six nations, Haudenosaunee, and Iroquois Confederacy, those are different names for the same thing, that peace confederacy. And I'm Mohawk, or more properly, Ganyangahaga, and the Mohawk is one of the nations that belongs to that confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the that union, it still exists to this day. Our Constitution is referred to as the Great Law or the Great Law of Peace, and there have been a number of people who have studied the similarities between the Great Law and the U.S. Constitution and the way the government of the United States is set up, and have noted all of the similarities because it is documented that there were many meetings between the framers of the Constitution and our leaders. And so there was a great influence
mm-hmm.
That was felt by the framers of the U.S. Constitution, by the leaders of the Iroquois Confederacy.
One question, I think I heard Russell Means mention this, but that he was saying that obviously some things were left out, you know, is there anything that you know of that you would highlight as, say, something that the Constitution maybe purposefully or carelessly left out as far as, you know, the peacemaking? That would seem to be something that was left out.
There was a lot left out. Not all of our ideas were borrowed, just some, and some
mm-hmm.
of our symbols. Probably one of the most important parts that was left out is the role of women. And the role of women wasn't really recognized by the United States government until much, much later, whereas our women had a very strong voice in the Great Law and were actually the ones to nominate
mm-hmm.
our leaders and could also impeach our leaders.
Mm. Oh, boy.
So the women worked side by side with the men to keep our society going. Some say that we are matriarchal, but that's not quite accurate because the women did not have more power. They had
mm-hmm.
equal power to the men, equal voice, as loud a voice. But we are matrilineal. I think that's maybe where some people are confused.
Good distinction.
We follow the line of our women in terms of kinship, and that helps define our roles as well.
Yeah, that just seems so, it seems like the world is catching up to that nowadays, you know, see some more examples of, you know, a lot more women in politics and you know, discussions about is fair pay in the workplace. So I think we're starting to catch up with where the Mohawk and the Confederacy have been for a long time. Let's see, we met a few times. You've come to Long Island, or as I like the Shinnecock word, Siwan Haki, the shell place or shell heaven. Now you've come. I got to meet you and Tom Porter. I don't know if you come here every year, but at the Cinema Arts in Huntington, and we met in Patchogue at an event. And last time when you spoke a little bit, one of the things that you said just impressed me. You said that the Mohawk spirituality could be summed up in, I think it was one or two words, and it was either thanks or thank you. And that just so impressed me that it's just like the way you said a certain story could take a long time to tell. That just is so refreshing because so much of the the modern society is just fast-paced, and people don't have a lot of time to seemingly to tell stories. Can you say a little bit about the oral tradition and how you got into that and how it shapes your the culture?
Well, you just touched on quite a few topics right
Yeah,
there,
I
and quite a few
nothing.
topics that are very important, I think, and
Start wherever you
very
want.
important to me. So let me see. I guess the best place to start was what you mentioned first, were the words of greeting. The Ohondonk Galiwadekwan is what some people call the Thanksgiving address. Some people call it the opening address. Some say, call it the greetings to the natural world, and some call it the words that come before all else. And these are words that we, as Haudenosaunee people, are instructed to say every day. And we also use them at the beginning of ceremonies and meetings of importance. And the simple version of the Ohondonk Galiwadekwan is, as you mentioned, to just say thank you. But our way of saying it is supposed to come from the heart, and sometimes we express it in more detail. And when we do that, we address every part of the universe, every part of the natural world, and we say hello, thank you, and I love you to every single part to show our appreciation for the gift of life, for all of the gifts that we have been given that sustain life, and for everything that is part of the web of life that we are part of as well. And so this is what is central to our spirituality, is this giving of thanks. So we don't have Thanksgiving once a year. We have it every day. We're supposed to say it every single day. And when we're in a group, what we usually do, and what we also can do individually, is start with the people. We express our gratitude and our love and appreciation for all of the people of the world, even the people we haven't met, even the people we will probably never meet. And it's an acknowledgement that we are all connected, that we all have the same Mother Earth, and that our lives are intertwined, even if we never see each other face to face, that our words and actions have an impact on each other. And so when we say these words, we first acknowledge all of the people, and we do so with our most sincere words, our most loving words and thoughts. And when we are in a group together, whoever is speaking those words will stop at that point and say, and now our minds are as one. And everyone who's listening, if they agree with what was just said, then they can respond by saying, what would be the equivalent of yes, or I agree, or I hear you? We have different ways of responding. Traditionally, our people might respond by saying to, or by saying yes in whatever language is their traditional language. Some people just say, yeah.
That's popular.
Yeah. And then we move on from there. After we've acknowledged all of the people of the world, then we turn our attention to Mother Earth, and we think about all the reasons why we are grateful to her. She's the one that supports us, gives us a place to walk around and sit and live. She's the one that provides a place for the plants to grow and for the animals to live. And she's always there for us. She never lets us down. She's every morning when we wake up and we open our eyes, there she is, mm-hmm. waiting to support us throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And so, again, what we do is we pile high our most sincere thoughts and words of greetings and gratitude and love for her, and we send that out. And then the speaker, again, will say, and now our minds are as one. And if the people agree, again, they respond. And so we are not only greeting every part of the natural world, we're also pulling our minds together so that we're all thinking alike, so that we're all reminded that no one person is more important than another, mm-hmm. that we're all connected, not just with each other, but again, with every part of the natural world. And this reminds us of that. And the process of doing this, of doing the Ahom Don Galiwat Dekwan, also helps us to put aside any thoughts that might distract us from the matters at hand. So we can concentrate on why we have come together, why we are meeting together. And then after we greet Mother Earth, then we extend our greetings to all of the waters of the world. We think about how water is life. We can't exist without it. From the smallest puddle to the largest ocean, we need that water. Most of our body consists of water, of fluid. Most of Mother Earth is covered with water. The plants need water to exist, and we need the plants. The animals need water to exist, and we need the animals. So we're all, again, we're tied together. And that water provides a place for the fish to live and for other creatures as well. And so we are so grateful to that water because it quenches our thirst. And when we feel as though we need to bathe, that water is there to help us do that and to cook and mm-hmm. to bathe Mother Earth and refresh her. So again, we extend our greetings, thankfulness, and love to Mother Earth. And then after that, we turn our attention to all of the fish that live in the water, because we believe that everything has a purpose. And everything has its original instructions. Everything has a job. And for the fish, it is to keep that water clean. Which is an enormous job, and it's getting bigger every day and harder to do every day. But those fish, they never give up. They remember who they are and what their instructions are, and they keep trying to do that. Plus, they give us nourishment as well, and so we are so, and they're part of the web of life too. And so we are grateful to them and send our greetings, our love, and our thank yous to them. And then we turn our attention to all of the grasses. There are all different kinds of grasses all over the world, and they have a function to perform. They hold the soil. They provide a home for many insects and animals. They provide food for many creatures. They give us a nice, comfortable, soft place to sit on a hot summer day. And so we are grateful to all of the grasses and send our greetings, thankfulness, and love to them. And then we think about the food plants. We think how they give us the nourishment that we need, the energy that we need to go about our daily activities so that we can follow our instructions. And for us, the food plants have a leader. The corn, the beans, and the squash, we call them the three sisters. And our ancestors realized that you could plant them separately and they would grow. But if you plant them together, they'll grow even better. They help each other.
Yeah.
So they are a lesson in cooperation. They remind us that we can accomplish more if we work together rather than separately. Plus, of course, they give us nourishment. We call them the sustainers of life. And traditionally, we ate other things as well, not just corn, beans, and squash, but they were very important to us. And we also turn our attention to all of the berries, and the leader of the berries for us is the strawberry. It's the first one to ripen. And so when we see that strawberry ripen, we know that all of the other berries will follow suit in their time. And so we are reassured that the cycle of life will continue as it should. And when we drink the juice from that strawberry, it's a medicine. It's a very strong medicine. Mm. So it also makes us healthy physically, but emotionally it makes us healthy too, because again, we're reassured that life will continue when we take that strawberry water and drink it. So we are grateful to all of the berries and to all of the medicine plants that help us when we become ill. And so what we do is in our minds, we group them all together so that we can send to them our greetings, our love, and our thankfulness. And then we think about the tallest plants, the trees. The trees are beautiful to look at. They bring great beauty to our lives. They give us a shady place to sit on a hot summer day. They provide the materials that we need to build our shelters and to make fires so that we are warm. The roots hold the soil so it isn't washed away. And they give us oxygen, and they help to clean the air, and they provide a home for the birds and many creatures. And so we are so grateful to all of the trees. And for us, again, they have a leader, and the leader of the trees is the sugar maple. And that sugar, when the sap starts to rise in the sugar maple in the spring, we drink that sap. We call it sweet water, and it's a medicine. Physically and emotionally, because it helps us physically and emotionally. Again, we are reassured that the cycle of life is mm-hmm. continuing. And we know that all of the other trees will wake up in turn. And so then we continue on in our greetings and in our acknowledgments, and we turn our attention to all of the insects and to all of the animals. And the animals are our brothers. They live side by side with us, and we are grateful to them because, of course, they give us food and they give us furs and leather to make clothing. And they also are part of the same web of life that we belong to. And those animals remind us from time to time of what our obligations are as human beings. Sometimes we forget, and we think that we are above the natural world or more important than the natural world. And every now and then, the animals will give us a little bit of a reminder of who we are and what we're supposed to be doing. So when you hear stories about whales washing up onto the shores, those whales are animals, and mm-hmm. they are telling us something. They're trying to communicate with us and remind us that we are all tied together in this incredible universe, in this incredible world. And so we send, and for us, the leader of the animals is the deer. The deer represents peace. Okay. And that's something for which we are always striving. Peace in the world and peace within ourselves, and peace with the rest of the natural world as well. And then we think about the birds. We think about how the birds share their beautiful songs and their beautiful colors with us. Some say, I don't remember who it was that said it, that we would die of loneliness if it weren't for the birds. When they fly up into the sky and we watch them, our spirits are lifted with them. We feel lighter. We feel more appreciative of the beauty that surrounds us. And so those birds, when they sing and show us their beautiful colors, it's also a medicine for us. And the leader of the birds is the eagle. The eagle can fly very high and he has keen eyesight, so he can see a lot of what's going on down here, and he can warn us of any impending dangers to our peace. So for us, he's a guardian, and we respect that eagle, and we also use the eagle feathers when we want to communicate with the Creator. So we think about all of those things, and then we turn our attention to the four winds that come from the north, south, the east, and the west, for they cool us on hot summer days, and they bring the change of the weather and the seasons, and they help to clean the air. And we also think about our grandfathers, the thunder beings, because they're the ones that bring the water, that fill the rivers and the oceans. They replenish our water supply, and they help to clean the air and help to bathe and refresh Mother Earth. And so we are so grateful, and instead of saying, oh, what a miserable day it is whenever there's a thunderstorm, instead we extend our greetings and our love to our grandfathers, the thunder beings, that we are so glad that they have come to visit us again. We'd be in trouble if they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go out and we acknowledge them and sometimes leave a gift for them when they come. And then we think about the one that we call our elder brother. He's the one that gives us light and warmth. He's the sun. And he follows a regular path across the sky so we can plan our activities accordingly each day. And he never lets us down. When we wake in the morning, there he is, just like a big brother watching over us. So we are grateful to him, and we send our greetings and our love and our thanks to him each day for being so responsible, for doing his job all the time. And then we have what we call the nighttime sun, and that's Grandmother Moon. And Grandmother Moon reflects light at night so that we can see each other, so we don't accidentally bump into each other and hurt one another. She controls the rise and fall of the waters. She regulates the monthly cycles of all of the female life, and that ensures the coming of the future generations. She helps us to count time. We think of her as the leader of all of the female life, and so we always extend to her also our most heartfelt words and thoughts of greetings, thankfulness, and love. And then we think about the stars. And the stars keep Grandmother Moon company and beautify the night sky. And they help us to find our way home when we are lost. They also put the dewdrops on the grass so that in the summer, in the morning, when the sun shines, the grass wakes up, and right away it has something to drink because those dewdrops are there. So those stars are a magnificent, beautiful painting in the sky, but they're so much more as well, and we send our gratitude to them. And then we think about the four spiritual messengers that help us when we lose our way. We as human beings, sometimes we forget who we are and where we're going and what our purpose is. And those four spiritual messengers come to us in different forms from time to time to remind us to give thanks each day and to fulfill our obligations. And then after that, we turn our attention to the great mystery, the one that has all the power, the one that's given us life, the one that's given us all of the gifts that sustain life. And there are many different names for that great mystery. Some say God, some say the Creator. There are many different names. All we know is that the Creator is so great that we can't imagine what he looks like or what he's about. All we know is that he's given us these gifts and has asked nothing in return except that we give thanks each day and that we take what we need from the natural world, but only what we need, that we're supposed to leave the rest for the future generations to enjoy. We're supposed to acknowledge those gifts, but not use them up. We shouldn't be abusing them. And so every day we're supposed to say thank you very much to all parts of the natural world and to the Creator. And then usually the speaker at the end will say, I'm only a human being, and so I'm not perfect, and I make mistakes, and sometimes I misspeak, and so if I have misspoken or left anything out, it wasn't intentional, but please feel free to fix it in your own way, in your heart. And that's a short version of what our spirituality is about and what we are supposed to say every day and at the beginning of meetings of importance. And it helps to remind us, I think, to not take anything for granted, to see the beauty in everything that surrounds us, and to appreciate every moment of our lives.
Oh, yeah, this is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, while you're telling that, most noticeable, just viscerally, I could feel a shift in my, you know, my emotion, my perspective. It's like, you know, things just shift, and I feel different. And, you know, since hearing about this a few years ago, I even started, you know, some of my daily meditations. They vary with different traditions, but it's helped me to add, you know, remembering to thank a longer list of the beings, because that's, you know, really, when I go out the door, you know, there could be a bird there could be an ant crawling, it could be rainy, I don't know. So at least by thanking them, at least a little bit, I know I feel so much more connected. And that is what amazes me, that is used, not used, but that, you know, you do that at pretty much every gathering. Is that correct? I mean, it's just so much a part of the culture. It's not just sort of quote political times, but it's just a ritual of, it's like a state of the culture, you know.
Well, as I mentioned, yes, we're supposed to say it individually each day.
Oh, okay.
We don't have to be in a meeting to say
right.
it. I could be all by myself and say it. And in my own words, it's not something that we memorize.
Right.
It comes from the heart. And it's not a worshiping.
Right.
It's an acknowledgement.
Uh-huh.
And we do it at the beginning of our ceremonies. We do it at the beginning of social gatherings as well. And we do it at the beginning of meetings. And again, it's I think a wonderful way to pull people together and to remind us that we are all connected.
Oh, definitely. You mentioned that you're the former director of the community. I won't let you pronounce it in upstate or central New York. Can you say a little bit, you know, about the work you've done there and what's going on? You mentioned also to me that, you know, the importance of the language revitalization, and you know, I know they sell some crafts and any, you know, anything you want to share about the community.
Well, my mother grew up on a reservation in upstate New York called Akwesasne, and some people call it St. Regis Mohawk Indian Reservation, but our name for it is Akwesasne.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a map of New York State, to me it looks like the sideways view of a boot, with the toe being out by Niagara Falls and the heel being near New York City. And if you lace up that boot where you would tie the bow, that's where Akwesasne is located. And she married a non-native man, my dad, and I pretty much grew up on Long Island, but we would go back to Akwesasne Yeah, I grew up on Long Island. There is that connection
Oh,
there.
neat.
You mentioned Long Island earlier. I grew up there. I attended school on Long Island, and I went back to Long Island to teach school for a few years. And I still have family on Long Island as well. But my mom, a Mohawk woman, and my dad, a non-Native man, married and had two children. And we would go back to my mother's reservation, Akwesasne, just about every single summer of my life. I don't remember us going anywhere else. That's where we would always go to see my mother's family. So I was fortunate in that I was in contact all my life with my relatives and friends there, and was able to learn quite a bit. Not everything. I don't know everything. I probably never will, but it's a lifelong process, but I'm working on it. What happened is that there was a man at Akwesasne named Zogo Gwenungwas, or Tom Porter. And in Tom's family, there was a story that was passed down from generation to generation, kind of like a prophecy.
Right.
After the Revolutionary War, George Washington, who had promised that we could keep our lands forever, broke that promise and started to give away our lands and ordered the destruction of our villages and food stores. And many of our people had to flee north and west. But some of them took with them the prophecy that someday we would return to the Mohawk Valley. And that prophecy was passed on through Tom Porter's family, and he heard it, and he would repeat that prophecy from time to time, not knowing that he would become part of it later on in life.
Right.
And he was invited to give a talk down in the Mohawk Valley. I don't know what year it was. I don't know if it was in the 80s or in the 90s, but a man named Vincent Schaefer heard Tom speak, and he heard that prophecy. And so every now and then, when he became aware of some land that was available in the Mohawk Valley, he would call Tom and tell him about it. And I think he hoped that in his lifetime he would see that happen, that he would see Mohawk people return to the Mohawk Valley. And eventually, there was a piece of land that became available. This particular piece of land is located 7 miles west of Fonda, New York, on the north side of the Mohawk River in central New York. And it actually was the site of old, old Mohawk Bear Clan villages.
Oh, interesting.
And later on, after the Revolutionary War, a man named Jealous Fonda came into possession of that land. His first name, Jealous, was J-E-L-L-E-S.
Okay.
And his last name, Fonda, should sound familiar because, yes, he is an old ancestor, a distant ancestor of Peter Fonda, Jane Fonda, Henry Fonda. And he owned that land for a while. He had he was a merchant, and he had a trading post there. And there's actually an historic plaque even to this day right there where his business was located. And then other families owned that land after him until about 100 years ago, when Montgomery County turned it into a home for the aged, for the poor, for orphans. And they ran that home for about 100 years and eventually boarded it up because they built a new facility. The place remained boarded up, and Vincent Schaefer told Tom about it when he found out that it was going to go up for auction. And so Tom Porter and a group of people from Akwesasne went to the auction, and they were able to obtain that land. And that's a whole other story, how that happened. It's an amazing story. It's miraculous, actually. And that happened in 1993. And so Tom and a group of people from Ogwazasne started to fix up the buildings and make them habitable again. And some people moved there and turned it back into a working farm. And then in 1997, Tom called a meeting of representatives from various Haudenosaunee communities and invited them to come and talk about the state of our languages today. And at that meeting, we talked about why our languages are at risk for becoming extinct. We talked about our history and policies, governmental policies of assimilation, among other policies as well, and the impact of the residential schools on indigenous peoples of the Americas, and how devastating that impact was. Mm-hmm. And we talked about what could possibly happen at Ganachohelege, and Tom suggested that maybe we could start offering language immersion classes there, and he wanted everybody at that meeting to let him know if they thought it was a good idea or not, and they did. They thought it was a great idea, and so in 1998, Ganachohelege, which is the name of the community, started to offer Mohawk language classes there. And we've been offering classes every summer since. We don't just do that. We also have workshops and conferences relating to the natural world and to Haudenosaunee culture and spirituality. We've had festivals there. We have cultural exchange programs with various universities and community groups, where when they come and help with our renovations, and in return we give them cultural presentations. So there's a lot that has gone on there since 1993 in terms of revitalizing our languages and our culture and spirituality, but also in educating Natives and non-Native people about who we are, and to attempt to give them accurate information, because there's a lot of inaccurate information out there still. So now a lot of other language programs have sprung up all over. There are others besides the ones at Ganachohelege, and the reason we think it's important to have these programs and to keep our languages alive is that they say that if you lose your language, that you also lose at least, if not more, than 50% of your cultural links. Because you've heard the expression lost in translation.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's true. When you translate from one language to another, there's a lot that cannot be translated, or would take so long mm-hmm. to explain to somebody else that it would become unwieldy. And so we lose a lot of our cultural links when we lose our language. Also, we've been instructed that when we speak to the Creator, when we address the Creator, whether it's in the Ohondon Kaliwa Dekwant, which I shared with you before, a little bit about that, or any other communication with the Creator through our ceremonies, that we're supposed to do it in our language, the languages that we were given. And so if we lose our languages, then we lose a big part of our spirituality as well. And then if we lose our languages, we also lose a certain amount of self-esteem and identity. There's a certain loss, feeling of loss there when you don't have your own language. So there are many reasons why we want to keep our languages going, and to be able to pass that on to the future generations, because we want to be able to teach them the beautiful teachings that we were given in the past. We want to pass along our way of expressing our thankfulness and our love as well.
Yeah, what you said about the what can only be expressed in those languages, that really hits home, because I had heard that about, say, 20% of Lakota is untranslatable. So you're saying that, yeah, the connection to the language, you really, that's such a vital link to a way of, you know, of living that is important. The technical thing about the language, when I see some of the words written and then I hear them pronounced in the Mohawk, it's very different. Can you say anything about, you know, the pronunciation? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's because it looks like a lot of K, there's some K's in the words, but when you say them, there's more of a G sound. So.
Well, our languages were not written
that makes
long
sense.
Ago. And a lot of our knowledge was passed down through the oral tradition. And so later on, when the Europeans came, especially when the missionaries came, they tried to write our language down. They tried to write down our words, and they did it with their alphabet. They used a European alphabet to try to write down our words. And some of those missionaries and teachers spoke a different language. Some of them spoke English, some of them spoke French. So some of what they wrote down might have been with a French accent as well.
Right.
They wrote it down the best way they could, but they may or may not have heard all of the little nuances that a native speaker would hear or be able to express. And so sometimes it took more than one letter to write down the sound that they were hearing. So as a result of that, our words are long anyway,
mm-hmm.
to begin with. But then when you use a European alphabet or an English alphabet, the words seem even longer, because you might have to use three letters to symbolize one sound.
Oh, okay.
And so also when the words are written down, we're using an English alphabet, but with a Mohawk phonetic system. So as you mentioned, when we write a word with a K, we pronounce it as a G.
Oh, okay.
And if we write a word with a T, we might pronounce it as a D. So it isn't always written it isn't always pronounced the way you would think it would be pronounced,
right,
because
right.
we're using a different phonic system. Also, to complicate it further, is there are slightly different pronunciations from one community to another. So, for instance, in the word for Kanachahalege, the Mohawk community I was telling you about that's located near Fonda, New York, in some communities, they would pronounce that R in Kanachahalege as an R, but in some communities it's pronounced as an L. So it can be regional,
right?
In terms of pronunciation. And then to complicate it even further, as people learned more and more about linguistics, they tried to refine the way our language was written more and more. So they would add all kinds of what would look like punctuation marks to be more precise. And then when our people started to study linguistics, they refined it even more.
Hmm.
And so you might see the same word spelled in different ways depending on who was writing it and when it was written. And also one community might use one way of writing the words and another community might use a different way of writing the words. So there's variation there, too. So it's complicated. We're trying to make it better and better all the time, just like everything else in life. But that's why sometimes you look at the word and you don't hear it pronounced the way you would think it would be pronounced.
That's just so much learning from your little explanation there. I realize how much there is to know about translation. Your name, I see it has a T. Your Mohawk name has a T in it, so I'm guessing that's perhaps a D, and then it has what English is called a colon between two of the words. Can you pronounce or explain a little bit about your Mohawk name?
My English name is Kay Olin. Kay is my first name, K-A-Y, and my last name is Olin. My Mohawk name is Yonadaewas, and it was my great-grandmother's name, and then my grandmother gave it to me when I was little, and then later on in life, when I became older, I became involved with the Longhouse at Akwesasne, and which is our tradition. The Longhouse can mean a lot of things. In this context, I'm talking about the place where we go to have our traditional ceremonies, and it's a certain building where we go to have those ceremonies, where we can give our thanks in a traditional way. And the people that follow those teachings and those traditions are referred to as Longhouse people. And so when I became involved with the Longhouse, going to the Longhouse and following those teachings, then I was given that name again in the Longhouse. And the difference was that when I was given that name in the Longhouse, that's how I was introduced to the Creator. And to everybody else in the Longhouse was by that name. So it means she is looking for her village, or she is looking for a village, and that's my name. So yes, the T in my name is pronounced like a D.
Okay.
Yonadaewas.
Yeah, that's lovely, lovely. Sort of looking at this overall conversation, we're kind of going from the wide angle and sort of zooming in on a smaller section, which would be more of the specific stories. And you have six stories on your CD, Mohawk Stories. When I heard this, when I first heard it, it reminded me, I don't know if you're familiar with Rudyard Kipling, wrote the Just So stories. And he says they're like how the elephant got his trunk, and how the leopard got his spots or something like that. And I was thinking, wow, I wonder if he got the idea from, the native tradition. Are you familiar with those stories?
I am familiar with those stories. I don't know. I think there are stories all over the world and among all different peoples that are attempts to explain why things are the way they are.
Right.
We have all kinds of stories. Some of our stories are, as you mentioned, just so stories, stories that explain why things are the way they are. For instance, why do the leaves turn color in the fall, and why does Chipmunk have stripes on his back? And we also have stories that remind us of how we should behave with one another. So they're kind of like Aesop stories. They're stories with a moral. They are stories that we tell and hopefully make us think about what we're doing and what we're saying so that we can change or the way in which we're interacting with one another so that we can continue to live in harmony with each other. Those are stories that could be told to a child who's misbehaving, and instead of scolding that child, then that child would listen to a story where the character in the story is misbehaving in a similar way, and the child could understand what he or she is doing that maybe is not appropriate, but without losing face, without being embarrassed, without losing spirit. And so that was one way which children were disciplined, was by telling them a story. And then we have stories that talk about our history and our treaties, so that we would know from where we have come and we could pass that knowledge on. And we have stories that explain our relationship with the rest of the universe. For instance, our creation story, which helps us define who we are, how we came to be here, what we're supposed to be about, and why we're lucky enough to have all of the things that we have that surround us. So we have many, many different kinds of stories. Plus, we have scary stories, funny stories, sad stories, personal stories, and we have new stories. We have not just the old stories, but we have new ones as well, because our culture is still alive, and anything that is alive is still growing.
Right.
So we're always adding to our stories. So we have many, many storytellers, and some tell the old stories, some tell new stories, some tell personal stories, some tell a combination of all of the above. And historically, these stories were passed down by word of mouth from one generation to another. It's only been in fairly recent years that we've been starting to write those stories down ourselves and record them. And there are many versions that are told for each story. One storyteller might tell the story in one way, another storyteller might tell it slightly differently. And that's true, I think, of all stories around the world. And some stories are supposed to be told only at certain times of the year or by certain people or in certain circumstances, so it's always a good idea to check on that before somebody repeats a story. It used to be that we would only tell stories, and I'm talking about the Haudenosaunee right now, that we would only tell stories in the summer, but these days I'm always going to my elders to ask if it's okay for me to tell them all throughout the year, and so far every single person among the Haudenosaunee anyway has said yes, it's fine, that we need to take these opportunities to share the stories and tell them and keep them going so that they're remembered. And so that's what I started doing. I started sharing these stories. It seemed like something that maybe I could contribute is to keep these stories going.
Yeah, it sounds like, as you're talking, it reminded me of the East Indian, the ragas, which I don't know a lot about, but I know that they have tons of them, and they're for different times of the day, specific times of the day and the evening. And then I'm also thinking of the Japanese haiku, which have lots of season words, and they're poems that highlight the seasons, and the Japanese have these it's almost like a science that when you say cherry blossom, that's spring. You don't have to say spring. So it's almost like these stories and the music and all these kinds of arts are more originally, that they're like a blend of science and arts, is what it seems to me. I just find that fascinating, because a lot of the modern education system tends to isolate and say this is science and this is arts and this is music, but it seems like it's a much more holistic process.
There's a school at Akwesasne called the Akwesasne Freedom School, and it's been in existence for quite a few decades now, and it's an alternative school. It's not run by the United States or Canada. It's run by the parents of the students that attend the school, and they teach all of the subjects, but within a cultural context and in the Mohawk language. Their curriculum was developed by the parents, and their entire curriculum for the school revolves around the Ahondong Galiwa Dekwan, the words that come before all else. And if you think about it, that opening address, that Thanksgiving address, includes everything.
Right.
And so if you use that as a guide, you can teach math and science and history and language and communication, you know, around that format. And that's what they do at that school.
What is the name of that school again?
It's called the Akwesasne Freedom School. Akwesasne is AKWESASNE. If you Google Akwesasne Freedom School, you can look at their website and see what they're all about, and you can read about their fundraisers. They have a big one in the summer where it's a two-day festival. Anybody can go. They have storytelling and music and entertainment, and vendors come, and there's lots of food. And they also have a huge quilt auction one day, and a silent auction. And at the quilt auction, it's all to raise money for the school so the school can keep on going. And they auction off quilts that come from all over and other items as well. And at the silent auction, they have all kinds of donated items to help the school continue in its work. And the children that attend that school are taught to be proud of who they are, and are taught about their history and their culture and their spirituality, and like I said, with their language, in their language. And it's a remarkable school. There are other schools that are working to do the same thing, but the Akwesasne Freedom School is the one that I'm most familiar with. So they're doing similar work as Gana Chohalege, except Gana Chohalege is down in the Mohawk Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And the Akwesasne Freedom School is located on a Mohawk reservation in upstate New York. Gana Chohalege also has a festival every year, the last weekend in June, and everybody's invited to that. Again, it's 2 days of music and storytelling and cultural talks and food, and there are artists that are there and vendors, and it's just a lot of fun. And you can read about them at their website, which is mohawkcommunity.com.
Okay, yeah, I'll put a link too on the on my webpage. I list, you know, the, some of the things mentioned, and I'll look for that and put the link up there. And if anybody wanted to get your CD, The Mohawk Stories, how would they, should they contact you directly, or?
They can, okay. They can, and my email is yonadaeus, which is I-O-N as in Nancy, A-T as in Thomas, A-I-E. W A S as in strawberries, 14@hotmail.com.
Okay.
But there are other ways to get it as well. You can get it at the craft store at Gana Chohalege. They have it there. You can also get it at, there's a website called Native Authors.
Mm-hmm.
.com, and they have books and CDs and DVDs by about Native people by Native people.
Yeah,
and
that's
my
that's
CD
important.
Is available there, nativeauthors.com.
Okay, yeah.
And also CD Baby.
Oh, okay, I know that one. Yeah, I think I one of the times when you're people from your community visited, I think that's where I got a copy of the Thanksgiving address. It's a tiny little pocket-sized book. I think it says by the Tracking Project of the Tree of Peace Society.
Yeah, and the Tracking Project is run by John Stokes, wonderful person, and he's worked with Native people for most of his life, I think, and has been wonderful. And the Tree of Peace Society was started by Jake Swamp, and his goal was to plant trees of peace all over the world, and he hoped to plant one for every child in the world. And he has since passed on, but we're hoping that his family will continue in that work as well. And you can Google Tree of Peace Society to find out more about that, and Project. You can also probably Google Tracking Project.
Okay. I've got a couple more things that I have on my list to mention, and then, you know, if there's anything else you want to add. One is any other books, you know, either kids' stories or the Mohawk or Haudenosaunee. I have a copy of Tom Porter's book, And Grandma Said, which is the Iroquois teachings, which is wonderful. Are there any other books? You know, I'm sure there's tons, but is there anything that sort of jumps to mind as that might fit, you know, might seem good for beginners to start with?
You know, we are so fortunate right now because not too many decades ago, a few decades ago, there were so few books that were out there about Native peoples of the Americas, and many of them weren't very good, and there weren't too many good ones for young people. Right now, there are so many more good ones available, and as I mentioned, a good source would be to look at nativeauthors.com. I think it's .com. It might be .org.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. Yeah, people are
not sure which one it is. But if you look at nativeauthors.com or .org, they have a listing of books and CDs and DVDs by Native people. It's about Native people, but by Native people. And they have a very nice explanation that goes with each item so that you can get a good overview of what that item is all about. So I really strongly suggest looking at that. Another good source is if you are in the Mohawk Valley, to stop by the craft store at Gunnetuhalege, which is on Route 5, State Route 5, on the north side of the Mohawk River. It's just east of Canajoharie and 7 miles west of Fonda. And their craft store there has a very nice selection of books and CDs about Native people, quite a bit about the Haudenosaunee. So those were two of the places that I recommend going to look at.
Yeah, that sounds like plenty. I mean, plenty certainly to get started. Now, after we talk, I'm gonna play a track from the Mohawk Stories CD, and the one I picked seemed most fitting for this, you know, the holiday, this time of year, the How the Birds Got Their Songs. You know, maybe, obviously the story speaks for itself, but is there anything you would want to add about
this
that?
This is a story that I learned from the Hanadolans, Ray Fadden. Ray Fadden was a school teacher who taught in some of the reservation schools. He was a science teacher, and he was teaching school at a time when most teachers were teaching Native students to be ashamed of who they were. Most teachers were teaching students that anything Indian was not good. But Ray was different. He was teaching his Native students to be proud of who they were, and he would tell them stories about their history and their culture and traditions. And on weekends, he would volunteer his time to take his students on field trips to show them what people were doing with their lives, and he would encourage them to think about what they could do to help their own people. And when he retired from teaching, he built a museum in the Adirondack Mountains. It's called the Six Nations Indian Museum. It's only open in the summertime, and I don't think it's open on Mondays. You can Google Six Nations Indian Museum, and I'm sure you'll find it. The museum is full of information and artifacts relating to Native people, especially the Iroquois, especially the Haudenosaunee, but other Native peoples as well. And when Ray was alive, very often he would sit down in the museum and make himself available to visitors who had questions. And there would be discussions between Native and non-Native people, whoever was visiting at the time. And it was a great place for sharing information and stories and songs sometimes. His son and grandsons continue to run the museum. And just as Ray did, whenever visitors would come to the museum, they would be invited to sit down on benches and listen to stories, our stories that have been handed down from generation to generation. So I learned this story there. I heard it there at the museum, and I also heard it from friends of mine who learned it from Ray, so I got to hear different versions of the story. And it's one of my favorite stories to tell because it's one of the first stories I learned. But I thought, I think it's very beautiful, and it tells not just how the birds got their songs, but also it's one of the stories that has lessons hidden in it that maybe people could apply to their lives.
Yeah, that is true. And you're mentioning Ray Fadden, it rang a bell because I read a wonderful book by, it's called Iroquois Fire by Doug George Kenatio. I'm not sure if I pronounced his name right. And I think he devotes like a whole chapter or so talking about Ray Fadden. So that's neat to hear the connection.
Yeah, Ray had quite an impact. A lot of his students grew up to be leaders. Very wonderful, influential leaders. And a lot of the information that he kept alive might have been lost otherwise.
Okay, thank you. I want to say thank you so much, Kay. And I'm wondering, is there one word in the language to say thank you, or is it the whole thing is thank you. That's my question.
The way we say thank you is nyawa, nyawa, and a big thank you is nyawa goa. Some people say nyawa, and some people say nyawa. This is, again, it's pronounced a little bit differently depending on location, nyawa or nyawa. And that's thank you, and the response to it is yo, which means it's nothing. There was one more thing I'd like to mention.
Oh, sure, sure.
All right, with you.
Sure.
This is 2012. Right now we're talking 2012.
Right.
In 2013, we're going to be acknowledging the 400th anniversary of one of our wampum belts.
Oh.
We have many, many different wampum belts. Our wampum belts are made out of shell, and they're not articles that we wear. They're articles that we read. They're a way in which we recorded our history and treaties and important events. There are many, many different ones, and these wampum belts have symbols in them that remind us of the stories or the treaties that are connected with them. There's one in particular called the two-row wampum belt that's going to be 400 years old in 2013. And this belt is made of white beads that represent a river of life or a river of peace. And it's a long belt, and going down this belt lengthwise are two purple stripes. And that represents two vessels traveling down this river of life or river of peace. One vessel is symbolically a European vessel, and everything that belongs to the Europeans is in that vessel symbolically. Their people, their language, their history, their clothing, their food, their songs, their dances, their spirituality. And the other stripe represents a canoe that belongs to us, and symbolically, everything we have is in that canoe. Our people, our languages, our history, spirituality, traditions, songs, dances, food, clothing. And the agreement that was made 400 years ago was that we would travel down this river of peace forever, side by side as brothers, not as father and son, but as brothers. And that I would not leave my canoe to try to get into your ship and try to steer your ship. And that you would not try to get out of your ship and into our canoe and try to steer our canoe. rather we would live in mutual respect with one another. And we're still hoping for that treaty to be upheld. And there's going to be an enactment of it this coming summer, where ships and canoes are going to travel down the Hudson River side by side as brothers and in harmony to enact the symbolism of this treaty. And so if you Google two-row wampum renewal, then you will see information about that. And if you want to become involved, there's information about that, what it means. There's information about that and where this is going to be happening and when. It's also that Turo also reminds us that we have a vision of not only living in peace with one another and mutual respect, but also we are renewing the commitment that we have to live in peace and harmony with Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. That years ago I heard an Onondaga leader mention that we can never have peace unless we make peace with Mother Earth.
Right.
First.
Right.
And that was Orrin Lyons that said that. And that's what the Turo is about also. Not just peace with one another as the human beings, but also that we need to make peace and preserve that peace and harmony and balance with everything in the natural world, especially that water in that belt. We're talking about that river of peace, that river of life, which is the water. And we can't exist without that water. And that water has been taking care of us all these years. And now we have to take care of the water. Mm. And so that's part of this two-row wampum renewal campaign that you can read about on the internet.
Wow, thanks for that. You know, with all that's going on in the world, we certainly need more reminders and more action and more coming together, the type you're describing. So I'll try to pronounce Naugoa. I hope I was close.
Yeah. And Nyawa to you for giving me this opportunity to share some of this with you and with your listeners.
Well, thank you again, Kay, and you're welcome. And it's a real treasure to hear. And I look forward to listening again because there's so much that you mentioned that one can look up. So, all right. I wish you a pleasant day, and you be well.
And you too.
Thank you.
Long, long ago, the birds had no songs, and it came to be that one day the Creator came to Mother Earth to see how things were going. He passed by a stream. And he stopped and he listened and he heard the gurgling of the water. And he thought to himself, oh, that's good. The water has a song, and it's a beautiful song. And then he walked past a grove of trees. Just then the wind picked up and it made the leaves rustle. And the Creator thought, oh, the trees have a song too. That's good. And then he walked past a village of the two-leggeds, the Umwe Umwe. A man walked out of the longhouse and he sang a beautiful song to greet the new day. And the Creator said, that's good. Even the people have a song. And then the Creator walked past a bush. And in that bush there was a little bird. And the Creator stopped to listen. But in those days, the birds had no songs. The Creator heard nothing. And so he spoke to that bird and he said, I would like you to gather all of the birds together for a meeting. I have something important to tell them. Fly away and tell them to all gather right now. And so that bird was very excited. He flew off and He flew in this direction, he flew in that direction, he flew everywhere, telling all of the birds to come together for a meeting with the Creator. When all of the birds were gathered together, the Creator spoke to them. He said, "You know, the water has a song. The trees have a song. Even the people have a song." He said, "I think the bird people should have a song as well. But it has come to my attention that sometimes people and creatures don't appreciate what they are given unless they have to work for it. So you will have to work for this gift. Tomorrow morning, when the sun's rays appear over the horizon, all of you will fly as high as you can. And when you can fly no higher and you start to drift back down to Mother Earth, you will hear your song. You will memorize it, and you will teach it to all of the members of your family." He said, "But just to make sure that you work the hardest that you can, just to make sure that you really appreciate this gift, let me tell you that the one that flies the highest will get the most beautiful song of all." Well, the birds were all so excited. All of the birds could hardly wait until the next day, except for one. One little thrush happened to be sitting next to a great big eagle. That little thrush looked up at Eagle and noticed how big and powerful Eagle was, and he thought to himself, "Surely Eagle will get the most beautiful song of all. I don't have a chance." And so instead of being happy that he was going to get a song, he was sad that it might not be the most beautiful one. Well, that night, it was hard for all of the birds to sleep. They were so excited. The next morning, that little thrush found himself sitting next to Eagle again. All of the birds were waiting for the first rays of sun to appear on the horizon. Little Thrush got an idea. While they were waiting, he thought to himself, "I bet Eagle is so excited that if I flew behind him, I could nestle into his neck feathers and he wouldn't even notice." And so that's what Thrush did. He flew behind Eagle and he nestled into Eagle's neck feathers, and he was right. Eagle was too excited to notice. And that little thrush went to sleep. Just then, the sun's rays appeared over the horizon. All of the birds spread out their wings and flew up into the air, higher and higher and higher. Well, the smallest birds were the first ones to tire. The little hummingbird, he was the first one to change direction and drift back to Mother Earth. And when he did that, he heard his song and memorized it and flew down to teach his family that song. The other birds started to tire. The wrens, the sparrows, the chickadees, crows, blue jays, and robins. They changed direction. They drifted back down to Mother Earth and memorized their songs. Soon, only the largest birds were left. The hawks, the vultures, the eagle, and even they were becoming tired. Time went on. Eagle looked around and he noticed that he was the only one left. He thought to himself, "Surely I will get the most beautiful song of all," and he was very happy. But he was also tired, and when he couldn't move his wings one more time, he changed direction and he started to drift down to Mother Earth. When he did that, Little Hermit Thrush felt the difference. He woke up and he flew out from behind Eagle's neck feathers. He flew up, up, up into the sky. Now Eagle noticed, but he was too tired to do anything about it. All he could do was look up with an angry look on his face. Even to this day, he still looks angry at that little thrush for tricking him. Eagle drifted back down to Mother Earth. He heard his song, and he memorized it, a very powerful song. down to Mother Earth to meet with the other birds. That little thrush, though, he wasn't tired. He'd been asleep all this time, so he flew higher and higher into the sky. Soon he saw a hole in the sky, and he flew through that hole, and there he saw a beautiful place covered with green grass and tall trees, and he saw rivers that ran crystal clear the way our rivers used to run before we polluted them. And then he heard it. He heard the most beautiful song of all. He memorized it. He flew back down through the hole in the sky, down, down, down to the council rock where all of the bird people were waiting. He was going to sing his beautiful song to them. But as he got closer to Mother Earth and he looked down, he saw all of the bird people looking up at him, and they all looked upset. They all looked angry. And that's when that little hermit thrush, for the first time, felt embarrassed and ashamed for what he had done. He realized that he had tricked his friend out of getting the most beautiful song of all, and now he was too ashamed to sing it to all of the birds. And so he flew into the thickest brush and he hid there. He's still hiding there. That little hermit thrush is still embarrassed, still ashamed. But every now and then, he has to sing his song. And when he does, everybody stops to listen, because it is the most beautiful song of all. And so that story tells us how the birds got their songs. And it also reminds us that we can't feel good about what we have unless we have earned it honestly. And that's how that story is.